the court, and we thank you, and we thank your law firm for having taken on the responsibility of representing the petitioner so well. The case will be taken under advisement. The next case on this morning's call is number 02-1846, Edward Schreiner against Signal Finance Company. Ms. Lux.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Sally Lux. I am counsel for the appellants in this matter. This matter arose out of a decision from the United States District Court for the Southern District of Indiana denying a motion to stay proceedings and compel arbitration. The underlying action involves a situation which involves two separate contracts. The arbitrability of a lawsuit which involves multiple contracts is not an issue which this court is unfamiliar, having decided at least two cases concerning this issue in 2002. As the court is aware, the initial and key inquiry is to focus on the language of the arbitration agreement itself and to decide whether or not it is broad enough to cover the scope of the underlying claims in the intended lawsuit. This particular the arbitration provision in this lawsuit arises out of an employment agreement between the appellee and my clients, which had been properly terminated. A subsequent agreement purported to attempt to reinstate the terms of that agreement. The arbitration provision at issue provided that any disputes between the parties with respect to any matter arising out of the agreement, including the amount of any payments you're under, will be settled by arbitration.
That was in the original employment agreement.
That was in the employment agreement, Your Honor. That is correct. So the key issue here is whether or not that broad language is sufficient to encompass the claims asserted in the district court. The plaintiff's claims in the district court are dependent upon the court's recognition of the reinstatement of the employment agreement itself. The proper focus of the inquiry is to look at the underlying contract and to determine which of the contracts provide the basis for the plaintiff's claimed remedies, injuries, and causes of action. In this case, a review of the complaint reveals that all of Mr. Schreiner's claims are totally dependent and rooted in the employment agreement itself. Consequently, it is imperative, in fact, it is compelled that the district court should stay, or this court at this stage, should stay this proceeding and compel arbitration.
Ms. Lux, if Mr. Schreiner had filed only count one in federal court, how would your argument change? Because all of your arguments seem to address the subsequent counts that seek damages under the employment agreement, and it seems to me that he concedes those are subject to arbitration.
Your Honor, I would suggest that if he had only filed the declaratory judgment action, that we would have been required to file a compulsory counterclaim dealing with the employment agreement itself. I think that Mr. Schreiner is attempting to parse out his causes of action in order to avoid the compulsory arbitration provision. The key inquiry is, regardless of what the cause of action is entitled, such as declaratory judgment, the key issue is if the allegations underlying the claim touch matters concerning the employment agreement, then the arbitration provision in the employment agreement governs the entire case. So consequently, what one needs to look at is what are the key facts that support the underlying claim. In fact, in his jurisdictional statement, Mr. Schreiner himself even concedes that the underlying dispute in this case involves the employment agreement itself. So what we look at is what the underlying claims are, what the source of the plaintiff's claimed remedy and injuries is, and if it is in any way related to or touches upon matters relating to the employment agreement itself, then arbitration is mandatory in this circumstance. That is essentially what occurred in both the Travel by Us case and the Airline Pilot Association case, both of which involved two separate agreements. Essentially what the court did in both of those cases was look at what are the plaintiff's claimed injuries, what are his causes of action, what do they touch upon. In the Travel by Us case, the source of the plaintiff's injury was not the agreement which contained the arbitration provision. It was a totally separate agreement entirely, which is why the arbitration agreement did not reach it. Similarly, in Airline Pilots Association, the court essentially looked at what is the contract which forms the basis of the plaintiff's claim. It was the collective bargaining agreement which provided the multiple chance opportunity and which contained the arbitration clause. Therefore, that arbitration clause was governing as to the entire dispute, even the issue as to whether or not that very agreement superseded the prior agreement. And I would contend that that is what is at issue in this case.
I have another question for
certainly.
You. Certainly. Could you clarify your argument about the amount in controversy? Are you arguing that count one doesn't meet that limit? Are you arguing that all the counts together do not meet that limit?
Your Honor, we were arguing that because the employment agreement should not fundamentally be reinstated, that there really are no damages at all. I understand Mr. Schreiner's argument with respect to if there's a colorable argument under his breach of contract claim that $75,000 limit would be reached, that that's appropriate, and I would concede that the jurisdictional amount under that case law certainly would give the district court jurisdiction in the event that for the underlying claim. Excuse me. In any event, we would ask that the court look at the underlying complaint, look at the causes of action. The evidence, the conclusions are indisputable that the only conclusion one can reach is that Mr. Schreiner's claims in this case really are that my client breached an employment agreement with him. That employment agreement contains an arbitration clause. Because his claims touch upon his employment relationship with the defendant, he is required to arbitrate those claims pursuant to the terms of the arbitration provision. I'd like to reserve any additional time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lux. We'll hear now from Ms. Schmidt.
Good morning. I'm Mary Schmidt, and it's my privilege to represent the plaintiff appellee, Edward Schreiner, in this cause of action. Initially, we would request that this court affirm the district court's March 8, 2002 order, in which the district court found appropriately, we believe, that the indication of interest, which is the second contract that the parties entered into, and which is the contract that does not contain an arbitration provision, is not required to be arbitrated. Mr. Schreiner initially has two separate categories of claims, for lack of a better term. The first category of claim is his request for declaratory relief concerning the validity and the meaning of the indication of interest in those terms.
Now, Ms. Schmidt, you seem to concede, now tell me if I'm wrong, but you seem to concede that the declaratory judgment count is the only count properly brought in federal court. And that count seeks no damages. So how would we calculate the amount in controversy?
Well, according to the holding of We Care Here, Your Honor, the amount in controversy can be determined by looking at what is the substance of the arbitration claim itself. In We Care Here, the parties who had been defendants in an underlying state court case filed a motion to compel arbitration in federal district court, and in that motion to compel arbitration against the defendants, who were the plaintiffs in the underlying state court, alleged that the plaintiff's underlying state court claim sought damages of approximately $74,950, which didn't meet the $75,000 requirement, but close enough. And the party moving for arbitration in the federal court case alleged that the amount in controversy concerning what was to be arbitrated met the $75,000 jurisdictional limit, and as a result, the requirements of 28 U.S.C. 1332 were satisfied because of that.
You're going to have to really help me with this.
Sure.
It seems to me that if you... Okay. You're seeking no damages on that count.
According to Indiana's declaratory judgment statute, Your Honor, Mr. Schreiner has relief. The relief that he is entitled to under declaratory judgment statute is a declaration from the court concerning the validity and the meaning of the provisions of that contract. And I'm talking about the indication of interest. That does not get him any damages. That's absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm.
He then concedes that once that issue is determined, if it's determined in his favor, mm-hmm. then he goes and arbitrates whether or not he's entitled to anything under the employment contract, because Cigna Finance has raised certain affirmative defenses to the validity of the employment contract, such as accord and satisfaction, and such as set-off for prior termination payments that have been made to him. So as a consequence, Your Honor, there are no damages requested in the declaratory relief count. But as We Care Hair demonstrates, that is not important for purposes of determining amount in controversy. If the underlying arbitration claim contains an amount in controversy in excess of the $75,000 limit, then jurisdictional requirements have been satisfied.
Of course, if you did seek damages on that count, the employment agreement would be implicated and the count would be subject to arbitration.
Arguably, yes, Your Honor, but what Mr. Schreiner has thought, and as the district court correctly noted, that issue must first be decided, and it's up to the court to decide that issue because the indication of interest does not contain an arbitration provision. I don't think that there's any dispute but that these are separate contracts. Likewise, as the court in Rosenblum did this past year and when it made its decision in August, the inquiry was twofold. Was the one contract arbitration provision broad enough to encompass disputes arising under a second subsequent contract? And secondly, were the terms of the contract that contained the arbitration provision incorporated by reference into the second contract? And in our case, clearly we have two separate contracts, and I don't think that Cigna Finance even is arguing that point. Likewise, the terms of the indication of interest that refer to the employment agreement do not indicate an intention to incorporate the terms of the employment agreement into the indication of interest by reference. And as this court also said in Rosenblum, that has to be clearly set forth in the subsequent agreement that there was the intention to incorporate the prior agreement by reference. A mere reference to the prior agreement is not sufficient. Clearly, Mr. Schreiner, in his request for declaratory relief, is just asking for two things again. Is the indication of interest valid? And what is the meaning of this one paragraph where he alleges that it reinstates the employment agreement? That does not at all depend upon a resolution or in any way arise out of the terms of the employment agreement. And the citation to the cases that indicate that if the allegations underlying the claims touch matters covered by the party's arbitration agreement, then those have to be arbitrated, are really in opposite to what we're talking about as the issues in this case. For these reasons, Your Honor, Mr. Schreiner requests that the Court of Appeals affirm the District Court's order of March 8, 2002, in which the Cigna Finance's motion to stay the proceedings and compel arbitration was denied. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schmidt. Ms. Lux, you have 2.5 minutes.
Thank
proper focus for this court and the proper focus for the district court was to look at the factual allegations in the complaint as opposed to the labels that were attached to those causes of action. We would submit that the label attached to the declaratory judgment action is immaterial to the issue of whether or not this case must be arbitrated. The key issue is what is the source of the claimed injuries and damages? And clearly, the source of the claimed injury and damages is the employment agreement. This case is all about Mr. Schreiner's employment relationship with Signal Finance. Consequently, the arbitration clause contained in that agreement is enforceable and arbitration must be compelled. With respect to Mr. Schreiner's argument concerning the Travel by Us case, it's indeed ironic. One, I would point out that in Travel by Us, there was a twofold inquiry, and if this court determines that the arbitration clause is broad enough to govern this dispute, it need not reach the second issue as to whether or not the arbitration clause was incorporated by reference into the second agreement. It was an either-or analysis. But Mr. Schreiner finds himself in a somewhat unusual situation in arguing that the employment agreement was not incorporated by reference for purposes of the arbitration provision when the very foundation of his case is dependent upon his ability to convince the arbitrator that in fact the employment agreement was incorporated by reference in its entirety into the indication of interest agreement. The issue of whether or not the employment agreement was reinstated was one that should have been reserved for the arbitrator. The district court should have confined itself to the question of the arbitrability of this claim. Because this case arises out of the employment agreement, it is subject to its arbitration clause, I would request that this court stay these proceedings and compel arbitration in accordance with the terms of the employment agreement. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lux. Our thanks to both Ms. Lux and Ms. Schmidt for their arguments today. The case will be taken under advisement. The next case is number 0223.